if you have a trusted family member, you gotta be careful with that. You don't want that to ruin a relationship.
We've always tried to incorporate our family, meaning our kids, and doing various roles. There are some roles that you might have members of your family that would be perfect for a certain thing, but I'd refrain from giving Aunt Sally a job just because she needs one, and that will ultimately just create more problems than you're trying to solve.
Welcome to Turning Profit, a podcast for people that love real estate. Learn the business models and skills that professional real estate investors use to make money and build wealth. Visit turningprofit.com for a wealth of investor resources. And now, here are your hosts, Pete and Heather Reese.
Welcome to the Turning Profit Podcast. Heather, it's so great to be here once again.
Yeah, so today's episode is all about building your boss babe. Just kidding.
Boss babe? Okay.
I always think that's like the funniest thing when you say my boss babe empire.
Okay. All right. Well, it could be your boss babe empire, but I don't have a boss babe empire.
Oh, okay. Well, then what should we talk about?
Well, we're talking about building your real estate investing team. So what we're going to do in this episode is we're actually going to talk about our team, how we've got everything set up. I guess it's not the only way to do things, but it's how we do it. And you might want to look at, get some great ideas from how we model our team and how you can expand your real estate business.
Right. We break down how the different team people are doing the different aspects of it.
Right.
Like a good way to like kind of separate the different things and figure out what you like doing and you can keep doing that, and what you don't like doing or what your strengths are and weaknesses, and also how to maximize your time.
So when we started, it was just simply me doing pretty much every job. Mm-hmm. Now, quickly, we advanced to the point where I didn't want to do everything, or I realized I didn't have enough time to do everything that we needed to do. So I brought in an assistant that was helping us in another business, and I brought him over to this side of the business. And then I just gradually took tasks off of my plate and put them on his plate. So then he could kind of make my life a lot easier. And if I'm being honest, which I am, he's better at some of the things, better at some of those types of things than I am. Mm-hmm. So it actually worked out pretty well.
That's what you want, though. You want to hire people who are better than you.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. I would love for my team to be better than me at every single thing.
Right.
So what we're going to be talking about today is basically all these different roles that we've, you know, expanded to over time. You probably won't start there, you know, in your real estate business as you're growing it. But this is not the end, you know, structure or setup that we're going to have over time. As we continue to grow, we're going to be adding on additional roles and further breaking down some of the roles that we've got. So one thing that I noticed over time is that we may have had one person doing kind of three of these different jobs that we're talking about today. But as we started doing more transactions and getting busier and busier, that became less and less possible. So we had to get more specialized over time. So the roles kept on, you know, getting more and more defined. And then we've got multiple people handling the role that maybe one person was doing in the past.
Right. So. Yeah. We need, and there's some departments where you need redundancy.
Yes, exactly. That's a good point too.
Yeah. Like if a team member maxes out, it's not fair to be like, oh, well.
Yes.
You know, no, you hire another person, or you hire that person assistant.
Yeah.
Or if that person, if it's a role where if they go on vacation, the whole thing would fall apart, then you need to have multiple people in that one department. So what was the first? So I think the first hire was more, well, was an assistant, was more of like organizational, right? Would you say that?
Or? Yeah, well, I'd say administrative.
Administrative, yeah.
Yeah, like doing sort of things like working with spreadsheets, with, you know, lead management tasks and things like that, you know, behind the computer type stuff, you know, like a lot of repetitive types of things that
took time, necessarily expertise.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So once you learn the position, you know, there's not a lot of like understanding, like freelancing and adapting to each situation. Pretty much every situation is the same, but it's work that needs to be done, and it needs to be, you know, it's repetitively done.
So if someone were to hire, this is more of like a virtual assistant kind of position.
Right.
What are some specific things that they could take off the plate right away if they hired one?
Well, building your lists was one of the things. Managing leads as they come in is another thing.
I mean, and managing leads, not necessarily talking to them, but making sure that they are, or are you saying
organized? Yeah, no, I'm you know, not talking about talking with the leads at this point. I'm like managing them in your system. Mm-hmm. Hopefully you have like, we have our land conquest business system where basically every single lead gets entered into the system, gets kind of set up. Mm-hmm. And that takes a little bit of manual work, and it's some organizational skills in order to make that happen. So if you're not organizing these things and you're writing down little notes on random pieces of paper all over the place, and you're you're not going to be able to manage those leads, and you're going to waste basically a lot of that spend on that direct mail or pay-per-click or whatever you're doing. Mm-hmm. You're just simply not going to be able to convert as many of those unless you have an organized system. So it's important for us to have someone on our team that actually manages all that.
Right, because time's limited. And also, if you need to call someone back, they call you and you're out and about, you aren't going to have your notes there.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But if you have it on your phone, mm-hmm. you know, in the system or a way to access it, and you quickly eyeball them, oh, okay, yeah. And you can jump right back in.
Yeah.
Because the goal is to have a bunch of different leads. So you're not, you know, yeah, once it's triggered in your brain again. And also, we hired this person prior to even creating the business system.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So we were doing a lot more things, I mean, more rudimentary before that, right? Mm-hmm.
Yeah, exactly, yeah. And then we've refined things over time and got better and better. Which is what happens with the business, you mm-hmm. know? You get more and more organized over time. You realize where your deficiencies are and you try to improve upon them.
Right, and what you need, mm-hmm. what would make things easier.
Right.
Quicker, faster, less time, all that, and save money.
Right.
So that's good to have the business system works in parallel with these people.
Yeah, so that's kind of mm-hmm. like the super team member, really.
Yeah.
So that our business system really organizes every single process of our mm-hmm. business, does a lot of automated things as well that
reminds
saves man hours or woman hours or however you want to say it. It's kind of nice to have that. Without that, we'd be kind of lost.
And then what was the next person we hired?
That's kind of the lead manager role that we were mm-hmm. talking about. So the lead manager role, he kind of does a number of things. Like, he puts all those leads into the system. He also helps put together our lists for mailing out mm-hmm. for our direct mail and everything like that. And then also kind of sets up those leads, kind of does some basic research on those leads, basically creates a map, notates if there's wetlands or floodplain or some of those other basic things like that. So we just get that lead set up in the system. So that way our acquisition managers can actually, you know, be connecting with those, you know, property owners and everything in order to try to put together a contract.
And maximizing their time.
Right. Yep. Mm-hmm. Or anyone that goes into that lead.
So right.
If I'm looking at the lead as well to try to determine if that's a deal we want to go forward with or not. So it's all that information is already there for me. I just click on the map instead of having to create it and all this kind of thing. So that was kind of the first person we brought in. Next big thing, how I expanded our business, was I brought on an acquisition manager. Now, currently we have two acquisition managers, and basically the role of the acquisition manager is to communicate with the sellers, the property owners, and their goal is to get that property under contract. So they do all the communication. They're basically the only person on our team, initially at least, that is communicating with these property owners to try to work out a deal with them, get the contract signed. That's their role. So they're talking with a lot of people that don't end up, you know, being a property that we're moving forward with, but it's kind of a process of, you know, weeding out the properties that we don't want and getting to the ones that are kind of a win-win. They're calling, they're spending a lot of their time on the phone. They also do text messaging and emails and things like that. Lots of follow-up, lots of proactive follow-up in order to, you know, try to come together on a deal. So
I realized we didn't put on this list the call center. Where did that come into play? Because that's not technically, that's an outside service.
It's an outside vendor, yes.
Right. But when did that start?
That was from the very beginning.
Okay.
I knew that you know, just from learning what other investors were doing, I knew that I didn't want to be answering all the calls myself. So I hired a call center, and basically you pay a flat rate per minute mm-hmm. where, you know, they're answering the phones 24 hours a day. So, I mean, you could have everyone go to a voicemail if you want to, but then there's going to be a certain percentage of people that don't leave a message. You've got to filter through messages and things like that. So it's just kind of, I thought it was a better way to go right from the start to have a call answering service. And it's pretty reasonable. We have a lot of minutes of time that we use. So we're probably at the upper range of what other investors need on that. But mm-hmm. I think kind of starting out, you could probably get $200-$300 a month, maybe what you're paying that call answering service. We're paying probably $1,000 a month for that right now.
Right. And what I thought was interesting, what I learned from that, is that people do call at weird hours.
Yeah, they do. Yeah.
And I guess that maybe makes sense because, you know, like the late night infomercials, like, why are they running it? Well, it's cheap ads, but also people are.
Yeah, and maybe they think they're going to get a voicemail too, and they're more comfortable with that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, who knows?
If you get them on the phone, you can have a quick conversation with them. So.
Yeah, and then they know that you're real. There's actually, you know,
mm-hmm. yeah.
someone answering or something answering the phone, I should say.
So, yes, that's not officially a team member, but they're kind of important part of the process for sure.
Auxiliary. Okay. Yes. So then after that, you said, okay, so you started with a VA, then you added a lead manager.
Well, the lead manager
is the VA. Sorry. Yes, yeah. Mm-hmm, okay.
Yep.
And then you did the acquisition managers.
Mm-hmm, yep.
And you had people answering the phones.
Yeah. So the one thing I should say about our acquisition managers is they are both US based at this mm-hmm. point. So I tried at first to have an acquisition manager that was, based overseas, but I realized that there was maybe a little bit of some of these sellers that we're dealing with maybe didn't trust us because they felt there was an accent with one of our team members mm-hmm. or something like that. So I tried to eliminate that. We do spend a lot of money to try to generate those phone calls and everything like that. So I'm just concerned about wasting some of that lead spend, if they don't think that they're dealing, maybe they feel like we're scamming them or something like that.
It's a scam company, offshore scam company.
Exactly. Yeah. So we're trying to avoid that. So we have US-based acquisition managers now to try to avoid that. So want to learn the secret to building a thriving land flipping business? Head on over to landconquest.com and join over 2,000 passionate land flippers leveraging the power of community to scale quickly. Sign up for free at landconquest.com. All right, let's get back to the show.
Okay, and then what was after that? You did a due diligence specialist?
Yeah, so what is that? The order that that I've got these on is a little mm-hmm. bit different than what we're hiring, mm-hmm. but we hired for in the past. But the due diligence specialist, this is something that we used to outsource. We used to have a company that every time we got a property under contract, we would send over that information to an outside company. They would do a little report for us, basically calling the county, the city, utilities, finding out some basic information about the property. We now have that in-house. So this person basically calls the county, calls the city, calls the utilities. We have a whole checklist of things that some basic due diligence report that we prepare for every single property that we do. He's making those phone calls and doing everything like that for every single property that we get under contract. So that's what the due diligence specialist does. After that, we also have someone on our team that is our due diligence quarterback. And essentially that role is compiling all the information about our research that we do for all these properties. So
is that their official title?
It's what we call it internally, but I don't know that that's the official title.
I'm like, I don't remember.
So I like to kind of like to visualize it, because that person, their role is to basically take all the information that we compile about a property that we are buying, look at the big picture. They're looking at the photos, they're looking at the on-site inspection, they're looking at the broker opinion, they're looking at the title report, they're looking at the due diligence report, and kind of coming up with, is this still a property we want to proceed with? Are there questions about some aspect of it? Is there something that they need to research further? So they're looking at the big picture, making a recommendation, but also diving into things that need some further research, which a lot of the times this is things that come up on a title report or something like that. So they're doing all those things. And it sounds like, maybe that's a easy job or whatever, but when we've got 40 or 50 properties at a time that we're buying, this quickly gets out of hand. It's important to really, the due diligence is the difference between a professional real estate investment company and one that's just kind of getting by.
It's the difference between a successful business and a no longer successful business.
Yes.
See that, right?
Super, super important. Right. And at the beginning, I wasn't doing as much due diligence as we're doing now, and I got lucky in a lot of properties, but it's super important in order to run a successful land investing operation. Another role that we've got on our team now, which is super important, is our asset manager. So currently our asset manager does two different things. Basically, they are managing any sort of value add projects that we want to do on a property. Say we're getting some brush clearing done, we're getting a perk test, we're doing a lot split, something like that. Basically, they are reaching out to vendors, getting bids, kind of managing that, determining, giving them the scope of what we want done, communicating with them until the project is done. So that's a lot of work involved there, as well as they are also doing the listing management, meaning that, we list all our properties with real estate agents and professionals. So they are kind of managing that relationship. They're communicating with them, checking in with them, seeing how the marketing is going, if we need to be doing price reductions, if there's anything else we should be looking at the property to enhance its marketability. So they're handling all that communication. So there's a lot of things that happen there with that asset manager role. And I could see in the future that those will probably be broken into, as we get busier, those will probably be broken into two separate jobs. So right now they're doing the value add stuff and they're also doing the listing management. So next we've got a valuation specialist, which is a really important member of our team as well. So basically they're looking at all these leads and these properties that come in and comps and really determining what the resale value of these properties are and if they're properties that we want to pursue in the first place.
Right. I feel like this was the holdout for you. Mm-hmm. First of all, it's hard to find someone that can do this.
Yep.
And also, do it well.
Mm-hmm.
And also, this was kind of your thing.
Yes, this is kind of like the last big, mm-hmm. well, one of the last big things that was sort of my thing. And I was really having a hard time finding someone that really seemed to get it. And we've got someone on our team now. It's been doing a great job with it. So I'm super excited about
that. Right. And you still have the final say.
Yes. Yeah. I still review all the properties before we, decide to buy them or decide to move forward with them or whatever. Mm-hmm. But this person's been helping out tremendously. So
I should say our daughter. And that's the other thing we haven't really touched on is that our oldest, Madeline, is also really,
really involved. And she was doing this role previously mm-hmm. in her company as well.
So. And then she got overloaded with other stuff too. Yeah. So she's been taking on more and more. So it just made sense that when we could finally find somebody else that could do it.
Yeah.
And maybe we should talk about that. How if you have a trusted family member, you got to be careful with that, because you don't want that to ruin a relationship.
Yes, definitely.
Definitely.
But, we've had, numerous businesses over the years and we've always tried to incorporate our family, meaning mm-hmm. our kids, in doing various roles. Could be, Maddie was talking the other day about how we used to, send out marketing for our real estate brokerage business and we used to send out direct mail. And she was like, oh, I remember just stuffing the envelopes for you guys. Like that was their job, you know? So we always tried to keep them involved. And obviously as their skills have advanced, we gave them more and more complicated roles.
I remember even when they were really little and during around 2008 or something, so they would have been 6 and 8. And it was during the REOs and short sales, we had to take pictures and do that. And they were the ones that were helping me figure out where we because that's crazy. It was before Google Maps.
Oh, yes. Yes.
Now that I'm thinking about it, I probably, that's crazy. But where's 633, whatever. Mom, it's right there,
Yes.
And I remember at one point I'm driving, so I couldn't go on the computer and they were entering stuff for me,
Yes.
Up to what they wanted to do, And then we would stop and get French fries or something. So it was fun, but we let them kind of lead that. And now that they're older, they want to do this.
Yeah. Yeah. So there are some roles and you might have members of your family that would be perfect for a certain thing, but I'd refrain from giving Aunt Sally a job just because she needs one and she may be not the best candidate for a job. And that will ultimately just create more problems than you're trying to solve. So moving on from that, we have a transaction team and our transaction team basically handles all the paperwork for our transactions. We've got the buy side where we're buying these properties directly from the property owners. And then we've got the resale side after we put the properties on the market, they are under contract to be resold. So we've got a team member that's our transaction coordinator. Mm-hmm. Basically they are mostly working on the purchase side of things. So they are communicating with the seller, they're communicating with the title company, they're opening these transactions, they are kind of handling all the paperwork and the communication that goes along to get that property from the point where it's, just a contract to the point where it's actually closed. So they're, coordinating with us internally about sending wire transfers and all that kind of stuff like that. We also have a transaction manager and her role in the process is basically managing the resales of these properties. So she's actually signing deeds and she is, working with the title companies and basically doing all those things that go along with the resale side of things. So, and then also managing the transaction coordinator on the purchase as well.
Yeah.
So, a lot of stuff goes into that, by the way.
Yeah. For me, that's one of the pivotal roles because they're actually checking the boxes. They're doing this, the paperwork part of it, which we've talked about before, is pretty intense.
It's very extensive. And there's always little challenges that come up along the way. And it's about adapting to those things and ultimately getting these things closed.
So right.
the purchase or the resale.
Yeah. And good transaction coordinators and managers are going to keep up on the, up-to-date requirements and different things. Like they work directly with title and escrow companies too. So you kind of don't have 5 million people calling you.
Boost your land flipping earnings with our new Land Conquest business system. It's designed for efficiency and effectiveness. This cutting-edge software tool is your key to success in the land flipping industry. Streamline and automate your operations to scale your business to new heights. With our system, you get a customizable website with 6 professional templates to choose from, up to 5 dedicated phone numbers, each with their own chosen area codes for creating a trustworthy local presence. And as a bonus, you'll get a $25 credit for SMS and email sends. You'll also get access to our tech team to build any automations or customizations that you want. And not to mention, we've got a great dedicated community to the Land Conquest business system to help us all thrive together. And with every step of the way, you get our 24/7 live chat support. But that's not all. You'll also gain access to our exclusive community to connect and grow with fellow land flippers. Seize the opportunity to transform your business. Visit software.landconquest.com to check out the Land Conquest business system and unlock the next stage of your land flipping success. Yep. And keeping the files very organized as well. So it's super important to have all the paperwork and everything at your fingertips and you need to reference it at a later time. You know, you've got, you know, the HUDs, you've got the, you know, the contracts, everything like that. There's many different documents and things that need to be organized on your end. You need to be able to reference this later if you need.
Right. So. It's almost like kind of like compliance officers, and they're making sure that the money you're sending out is what is being sent out, or money coming in that needs to be. It needs to balance. It's also, you need all these things for taxes, you know, to prove you didn't just get, you know, $100,000 wire, that you had actually sent out X amount of dollars to, you know, that wasn't all profit.
Yes.
You know, and people forget all that kind of stuff. They work with notaries, making sure stuff gets notarized, making sure that they close out the files, make sure that we have, you know, did the deed get filed?
Yep.
Is it still in our name? All this kind of stuff. So there's a lot that goes into that. I think that's a super important, department, and it's also where you need redundancy.
Yeah.
Because if someone's gone, it's all on you. Yep. You got to jump into each file. Thankfully, with the business system, it helps keep track of all that, right?
Yeah.
But it's just something you want to consider.
Yeah. Okay. So, and then the final kind of role as part of our real estate investment company is one of the last things that we brought on is COO, Chief Operating Officer. Basically, what they do is they're basically managing the team. They are managing all the processes within the business, trying to improve all the processes within the business and making things run efficiently and basically improving the business every step of the way. So they're handling, you know, the initial stages of like hiring, working with our employees as far as
they're like,
you know, keeping them accountable. Yes, optimization and all these types of things. So super important role. And that's kind of been the latest big step that we've taken to kind of professionalize our operation. And it gives us the kind of foundation to expand further into the future.
Yeah, I didn't realize how much that would be needed. It's one of those things that if you don't have it, okay, as long as you've got the team, right?
Right.
But it kind of takes it the next step where it's not just you. Because when you're doing that, that means that you're pretty much not HR necessarily, payroll HR, but you're the person that is the first go-to for everybody.
Right.
For any issues, for anything, right?
Right.
And everyone has issues that come up, right? Professionally or in your family or in your personal life, whatever. But also that means that you have to be taking away the time from growing the business.
Yeah.
And you've got to look at each one of the, okay, lead managers, where are we at with that? Due diligence specialist. You know what I mean?
You're going to be every little question and everything was coming to me directly before. Mm-hmm. So this, now that doesn't happen. I mean, there are still some things that come to me directly, but the goal for the future is to have all those questions and things going to, you know, the COO or the other members of the team. And then obviously certain decisions and things I will still make, but a lot of the day-to-day, like little decisions and things like that will not be my responsibility anymore.
Right. But you don't have time to optimize every single one of these things.
Nope. And I'm not good at it either. Well, I'm fine at some things, but that's not my greatest strength is kind of like building the business at a big picture level. And I love kind of deals, you know, putting deals together and stuff like that. So I should be focusing on those types of things.
Right. And I think that's really important. I saw this one thread. Someone was talking about like, oh, thread meeting. It was like on, I don't even know, Reddit or something. And they're talking about like lifestyle creep when you make more money, right? Mm. And it's the same kind of thing in a business. It's like people were kind of like picking on this person for like getting a housekeeper. Mm. But it's the same thing in a business. Like just because you can doesn't mean you should do it.
Right.
Like this person sure could do their own housekeeping, right?
Right.
But then they don't have that time to invest in themselves in personal growth or professional growth. So just because you can do all these things, that's something that a lot of people get hung up on. Like they're probably listening to this and they're saying, well, shoot, I mean, I can do all these things. Right. So it sounds
I'll do the transaction coordinating. Yeah. It'll just take me a couple hours a week. Yeah. You know, like whatever.
It's a waste of money to hire people.
Yeah.
And what do you say?
If you're going to expand your business, mm-hmm. if you're going to get to larger and larger levels, I mean, there's no large businesses that are doing, you know, like one person businesses is just simply not possible.
It's impossible to scale beyond a certain point.
So I guess it depends what you want to do. If you just want to do a couple transactions a mm-hmm. month or whatever, you can do everything yourself if that's what you want to do.
And that's probably good. If that's what you're looking at, don't do this for the most part, because it'll eat away into your profit.
Obviously our team is costs us a lot of money. So there's mm-hmm. a lot of expenses associated with this, but we make up for it in the scale that we do.
And we've done other episodes too, but like AI and stuff. And that is going to really supercharge a lot of what our employees do.
Right.
And we encourage them to use that, like maximize your time. You just, you know what I mean? Like I don't want someone sitting in front of a screen doing something, you know, repetitively
manually when they don't have to. It's like talking to kids about like, oh, you can't use a calculator. Well, they're going to have a calculator at their fingertips every single step of their life. So why not let them, you know, like, yeah, how to use the tools that are available to them.
Yeah. You know, I'm not looking for like have an employee have, you know, a melted brain because they're forced to do. No, you know what I mean? Like utilize the tools. It's better for everybody. And so I think the same kind of thing, you got to look to yourself and be like, give yourself permission that if I want to scale it, I'm going to need to bring these people on.
Yep.
You know, we talked about the AI and then that can help kind of optimize everything. The business system, that can help optimize everything, right? Other ways that you can optimize in addition to your team is learning, right?
Yeah. Oh,
continued growth, education. What are some of those kind of resources that you think people could use?
First of all, if you're not a member of our Land Conquest community, I would certainly suggest that as a first step. In order to join our community, it's a free community, by the way. It's just simply go to landconquest.com. Or you can also find us, it's hosted on the school platform. So you can go to school, skool.com/landconquest. So it's a vibrant community. I think we've got 4,300 members of the community as of this filming. We have lots of free resources in that community as well. And, you know, people asking questions continually, and you'll just be learning by participating in the community. We also have a kind of a next level if you're looking to do this kind of as a real business, you know, I guess you could say. So that's our roundtable community. As part of that, we've got our Land Conquest training course that's part of it. We also do a weekly Q&A call, a 1-hour Q&A call with me every single week on Zoom. And then we also have our Land Conquest business system that is bundled with that as well. So to get information about that, you can just go to roundtable.landconquest.com. So the next segment of the podcast, though, is we are cherry picking questions from our Land Conquest community. And I sent these over to Heather in Slack. She's got them on her phone. She's going to read them off to me and I will do my best to answer these questions.
Oh, I think you'll like this one.
Okay.
This one comes from Sean, using AI to analyze the land development code.
Oh,
this is funny though. I think I mentioned something like this. Like,
yes.
You know what I mean? Like last week. That's funny. Hello everyone. Is there anyone using ChatGPT or Claude to analyze the land development code for a county? It seems like it doesn't paste in the right format, especially when permitted uses are usually in a chart. So the AI doesn't get that information or the PDF is too big. Do I just have to copy and paste the small sections? Looking forward to hearing other strategies using this tool for that purpose. Thank you.
It's basically talking about using these AI chatbot tools in order to help you research. So there are numerous ones out there now that you can use. There's ChatGPT. There is Claude mentioned in this question. Also Gemini from Google. So they each have a thing called a context window, meaning that there's a certain amount of information that you can load into there or attach a file or something like that, then it'll be able to analyze information up to a certain amount. So they have, some have large contact windows, some have smaller ones depending on what model you're using. And these are constantly changing as well. You might have to use a certain one in order to get that, the large enough context window in order to answer your question. So a lot of these county sites, they have PDFs that are like 200 pages long. So it may be too long of a PDF you know, in order to upload into there to get the information, analyze that information that you need. So in a situation like that, you could either try it on a different model, or you could just simply trim that PDF to the relevant section that you need and then upload that and then ask them questions based off of that.
Right. And then just keep doing that for mm-hmm. each thing. And then you could ask them, okay, based off of all this information,
yeah,
give me the,
mm-hmm.
okay, I like it. And this is from Jay. Does anyone outsource calls with sellers and buyers? I want to try and understand if the calls and discussions those sellers and buyers that come from leads can be successfully outsourced, or if that job's something that must be kept to yourself to prevent degeneration of results. I want to create systems so I can be the most hands-off and manage the systems, especially after scaling. Are there any parts of the land flipping business that really should not be outsourced? That's a good question.
Yeah, and it obviously ties in very yeah. well with what we're talking about today. So acquisition managers, the exact role that being mm-hmm. asked about here, basically that's the person on our team, the people on our team that communicate directly with the leads and the sellers and everything like that. It's been years at this point since I've mm-hmm. actually had direct conversations with the sellers and the right. leads that are coming in. So it certainly can be outsourced, meaning I think the term outsource here maybe is like if having some external person from your team doing these types of things. I'd be somewhat cautious about that. I'd have someone on your team that's actually working regularly with your team, whether they're an independent contractor or an employee or something like that. But I'd have them part of your team that's actually doing these types of calls, not using a service, I guess, to do mm-hmm. that part of it.
Yeah.
That's all I suggest. But, you know, pretty much every aspect of the business can be, you know, you can have team members doing those things and, you know, just chip away at them one by one. Some things are easier to get off your plate than others, but it's all possible for every single part of it.
So. Yeah. You know, we talk about that too, because we were holdouts too. Like, it'd be a lot. It's going to take a lot to train this person. Like, you know, you want to do it, but you're thinking, gosh, it's going to go a lot into it.
Right.
But we talked about it before. If you do the training material one time, you can duplicate it then.
That's right. So, you know, it's a process of feedback too. You know, sometimes right. these are complicated roles mm-hmm. and the person kind of getting up to speed on it will have questions and they'll need feedback from you. Like, did they do this to the way you wanted it done? Mm-hmm. You let them know yes or no, or how you would have viewed things and how you want it different, you know, like, so it's a little bit of a process. It's not simply sometimes just, you know, giving them a video and then hoping they do it right. It's a matter of working with them until getting them, you know, on the same page as the way you want it done. Mm-hmm. So,
okay.
Are you looking for funding for your land flipping deal? Then head on over to partnerwithpete.com. It's an innovative new funding program where we split the profits with you 50-50, but we take it one step further and we handle every other step of the process in the land flipping business. Yes, that means we handle all the due diligence. If the property needs any value add, like clearing brush, perk test, survey, we'll get that paid for up front. Then when the property resells, we split the profits 50-50. There is absolutely no downside for you as an investor. If we lose money, we don't pass that on to you. But when we make money, when we make profit, we split the proceeds 50-50. So as a recap, we handle every part of the process. We split the profits with you 50-50. There's no downside for you as the investor, only upside. So go to partnerwithpete.com, submit your deal there, and we'll get it checked out within 24 hours.
Okay, next one is from Colby. Sloped properties. I thought they said slapped properties okay. at first. I was like, who's slapping properties here? Do you guys avoid sloped properties altogether, or will you flip them depending on the comps in the area? I have three leads on properties that are pretty sloped, but have comps around them that are similar and have sold for a good price within a reasonable time period. I don't want to put myself in a bind with one of these, but I'd also like to capitalize on them. And me being relatively new to the business, they're looking for advice.
Okay, so slope properties. We buy and sell slope properties. Not my favorite, but I definitely prefer more gentle properties if we can find them. But we've made a lot of money off of slope properties. So
are you thinking slapped now every time you got to say
kind
it?
Kind of.
Sorry.
But a couple of things to think about here is not all slopes are the same. You might look at one property and say, oh, that's sloped mm-hmm. and this is sloped. So the severity of the slope comes into play. Like, you get it to a certain point where the slope is just like too much to even do anything with, like getting a driveway into that property or something mm-hmm. might be really, really challenging. So you got to look at that and make sure it's a similar type slope. And obviously what was mentioned here about the looking at comps that are mm-hmm. sloped and sold and everything like that, that's exactly what we do. Like mm-hmm. if we're considering a property that's sloped, we're looking at comps and saying, okay, I want to find some slope comps in the same area. And if they sold for a certain price and you can, you know, and they sold in a reasonable amount of time and you can buy it with enough profit margin to get what you need to get done, then, you know, we look at those and we buy those buy and sell those properties all the time. So just make sure it's apples to apples. Make sure you're not comparing it with the property that's not sloped. Make sure you're looking at the time on the market with those comps. So typically slope properties are harder to sell, but if they're priced at the point where they're going to sell quickly, then we will definitely consider those.
Yeah. You know, something I learned was like a kind of like a community character. Mm-hmm. If like all of them are like that, then it's likelihood that everyone accepts that. Same with swampland in a way, right?
Yeah.
Wetlands. Mm-hmm. Sorry.
Yeah.
Yeah. First glance, I'd be like, no. But then if you look, wait, there's houses. Tons of houses here. Everyone's mm-hmm. building this.
Right up to the wetlands.
Yeah, right. Not in the mm-hmm. wetlands. That would be very
They won't let you do that.
Yeah. But you know what I mean? Like, so if you're looking at it, but if you're saying, okay, I've got these three pieces and they're sloped, but they're not horrible, but everyone else is building on flat land.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
There's probably a reason.
Yeah, like some areas are just mountainous, you know, like the mm-hmm. kind of the whole western part of like North Carolina and you know, kind of like that whole Appalachian mm-hmm. mountain chain through all those states. So like that whole area is all like slope properties. It's kind of rare to be in the valley floor.
And you might not want to. There's maybe they don't build on the valley floor because of,
certain spots. Yeah, maybe.
Yeah.
So you just want to take that into consideration. You know, like all the properties that are selling in that area are basically slope properties. And, you know, obviously that's a good sign. Yeah, going to hopefully work for you. So.
Okay. I like this one. Zach says, what's up, y'all?
Okay.
We don't really hear y'all around here, so it's fun.
Okay.
Anyone have any thoughts into running some land opportunities that are zone CL1 commercial mixed?
Yeah. So first of all, I'm just going to take this question as like commercial zone properties. Each commercial area, they've got a different designation. So CL1 could be CO1 in another area. Like each jurisdiction has their own kind of labeling system.
I'm going to stop you because that's a good point. Just because you think you know a CL whatever mm-hmm. in one area, don't assume that means the exact same thing.
Look it up in the county records. Do that research on your
ChatGPT. Yeah, every single time. Yeah, okay, go on.
So what's important to note, though, is commercial properties are kind of a whole separate animal than residential or agricultural or recreational type properties. So commercial properties are generally towards a town center, city center, kind of, or an industrial area designated in these cities or towns. And they are, you know, meant to have that designation for particular uses, you know, like they want them like built for that specific purpose.
It's the whole
purpose.
Community plan. It's
right,
a master
exactly.
plan already done.
Yeah, like, hey, this is the industrial area, so mm-hmm. this is the area for warehousing or storage or something like that. Like these defined uses for mm-hmm. that particular area. So, you know, you're not going to be able to like buy a property like that and then just build a house in it. You know, right. maybe a great price or something like that, but you're just simply not going to be able to do that. So a couple things you really have to consider is that there's a lot of things that go into this. First of all, commercial properties in general, they generally take longer to sell unless you've got some super in-demand type thing. You are a lot of times going to be selling to some sort of end user, you know, maybe like that want to build a self-storage facility, or maybe they want to build a restaurant or something like that. So you kind of got to wait for your right buyer to come along. You've got to make sure, you got to be relatively certain that there's actually demand for commercial building in that area. So a lot of older towns and things that are kind of stagnant or maybe on the decline, there are very few businesses that want to set up shop in those areas or build a new structure or build, you know, develop something from the ground up in some of these areas. So you might have a great piece of land that's really, you know, in the great part of town or whatever, but the town itself doesn't have a lot going for it. So I see a lot of those types of things come up and they're tempting because these are cheap properties or whatever. But really, when you think about it, like who's the end buyer going to be? Even if you gave a business this land for free, are they going to want to invest to actually build the structure in this mm-hmm. town?
And they're hot and cold, and they're also very temperament with the economy.
Right.
You know, it's feast or famine, it feels like, with commercial.
Yeah, so it's important to make sure there is that demand there if you're mm-hmm. going to be buying these properties. And be willing to sit on them for a while. The other thing I've noticed is that a lot of the commercial brokers will kind of tell you a super high inflated price when they're giving you their opinion on the property. In reality, that's retail or retail plus. And in order to kind of force a quicker sale, generally, you're going to have to price it quite a bit cheaper than that.
And they push back on that.
Yeah, and they don't want to they don't want to do that a lot of times because they've got other listings. They mm-hmm. they don't want to diminish, you know, property values in that area and things like that. So there's kind of a lot that goes into it. It's a whole different area. So.
Yeah, it's also harder to find agents in that.
Yes.
A lot exactly. harder.
Yeah. There's money to be made in the right properties and the right areas and everything mm-hmm. like that. So, but it's just kind of a different thing. You know, I wouldn't expect to be flipping all of these properties quickly, I guess you could say.
Well, that's it for the questions for today.
We did it, Heather.
You know what I always forget is where can everyone find you online?
Oh, you can find me on Instagram mm-hmm. at Partner with Pete. You can also find me in the community, Land Conquest community. So
I'm
in there hanging out, answering questions and kind of helping however I can.
Yeah, and you can find our podcast on your favorite podcast player.
Oh,
and
yes.
also on YouTube, right?
YouTube, yes. How can I forget that? So we're putting in a lot of effort into building our YouTube channel. It's just at Turning Profit on YouTube.
Right. And we do more than just podcasts over there exactly. as well. So yep. you can get some special episodes and all sorts of other fun things. But my favorite thing to talk about or to share with everyone, because I don't think new people don't know, but you did 50 First Deals. Tell them about that.
Oh, okay. Yeah. So that was a kind of a report that I prepared along with a video kind of explaining everything. So basically what I did is I took the 50 first deals that we did in the land investing business. I go through them one by one, break down what we bought these properties for, what we sold it for, our profit, return on investment, the story that went behind each of these properties, and just go through them one by one, all the 50 of the first ones that we did. So in order to get that, simply go to turningprofit.com. And you have to put in your name and email address. But if you do, then we send you that video. And you know, I've gotten a lot of feedback that it was very helpful for a lot of people because, you know, you get to follow our progression, how we started in this business, and you can maybe gain some insight from that.
It was messy.
Messy.
I'm just kidding. No, I like that though, because you can see like, okay, they started here and what you learned each time, like this really worked or this one did not work really well.
And you learn a lot by doing 50 deals.
Yeah. So. Well, that's it. I guess we'll see everyone next week. So have a good week and we'll see you back here.
We'll see you then. All right.
Bye.
Bye.
Ready to start turning profit yourself? Head to turningprofit.com to step up your real estate investing game. See you on the next episode.